This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You are on Hide and Seek. This is your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self here on Joy 94.9. Andrew the Apprentice here.
And James Finlay.
And James, Age 2014 is drawing to a close. It's only 12, 15 hours away to the closing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And a man who's been here all week and has been running around like a headless chook, no doubt, is the blogger, world famous blogger of My Fabulous Disease, Mr. Mark S. King. Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Good, good. Welcome. You must be exhausted.
Now, I am. I did get a good night's sleep last night, but it's been a whirlwind.
When did you get here?
I got here last... What day is today? I got here on Friday. Yeah, I got here Friday.
Okay. So you had a good weekend here. So that's
Right. Well, we had pre-conferences starting on. I was talking about gay men and sex beginning on Saturday, and before we even got into the week.
Right. No wonder.
You've been in the around doing AIDS conferences for a while. How many AIDS conferences is this?
It's hard. I mean, international conferences, I've been doing them since Geneva, which I think was in 96. But I've been going to AIDS conferences or whatever we could come up with beginning in 1985.
Wow.
Which is when you first became HIV positive.
That's right. I like to say I've had HIV since it was invented.
You were an early trender.
Yeah, well, I'm a joiner. So, you
know. Tell us what it was like being one of the first.
Oh, one of the first. Well, you know, it's this is a sexy show. I don't want to make your audience go limp, but it was tough, you know, in 1985 because you're playing invisible. You're trying to deal with your own diagnosis as well as watching all of these previews of coming attractions around you. I lived in West Hollywood, California.
Yeah,
you know, the gay mecca at that time, and it was a graveyard very quickly, and it's definitely shaped the rest of my life, just in terms of the memory of that, a little post-traumatic trauma, I'm sure, in terms of what that did to me. But the good news is I came out the other side of it, and I rejoined the living, and I'm really grateful about that.
What I've always wanted to know what sex was like back then, before...
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny because I was talking to a younger person. I'm 53.
Wouldn't have guessed.
Thank you. I was hoping you might say that. And I was talking to a younger person who said, he confided, he kind of said, you know, I wish I knew what it was like when HIV was just not even around.
Yeah.
To have sex with guys, to pick up guys, to
do whatever you want.
To go completely, just let your instincts be your guide. And your morals. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not as if the default is always being a slut, but when you're just in that whole process of meeting somebody, there was no short list of questions that began with positive or negative.
Yeah.
You know, and there was no inherent fear in where my body fluid is going and who's got what. And so, yeah, now it is true. I remember distinctly teaching my best friend Charles how to cruise. It was in New Orleans at Lafitte's Guest House, and it's a very crowded, very cruisy place. And he was new to the scene, and he'd never been to a gay bar before. And so I was demonstrating to him about, you know, you stick your thumbs in your front pockets of the jeans because you really kind of want to, you know, frame up that area down there, right? Yeah. Exactly. And don't lose eye contact and all. And I'm giving him all this advice. He says, "Well, but what if I have sex? And well, you know, what if I get the clap?" And I said, you go get a shot and get on with it. You know, it was, and I remember that conversation distinctly because, when we talk about today, when we talk about, like Truvada, people taking PrEP, you know, but it doesn't protect against other STDs. You know, you don't want to get those. And so that's why you have to keep using condoms. My response is, well, the very idea of getting gonorrhea makes me nostalgic. That's how I feel. I'm just nostalgic because, oh, I remember the day when you got gonorrhea. You know, oh, boy, yeah, that was terrible. You know, no, you know what? It wasn't so freaking terrible.
Pretty annoying.
You know, it was annoying. You know, it kind of came with the territory when you were young and single and all of that. And, you know, the shot in your ass hurt. But that was, why do we catastrophize everything? And why do we keep raising the bar on gay male behavior? In other words, for 30 years now, we have had to use condoms. And the previous, 2 million years, we never did, right? But in the last 30 years, we've had to use condoms, and we've done what we needed to do, and now we get to a period in which there are other options, right? Mm. But whenever we get one of those other options, they say, oh, yeah, but you might get, you could get the other STDs. It's like we keep raising the bar for gay men, because God forbid gay men get back to the place where we can just fuck the way God intended for us to.
Yeah.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew and James are joined with Mark S. King from My Fabulous Disease.
Hide and Seek.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, Chance Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice with you. And if you want to get involved in tonight's program, it's very damn easy. 0427 Joy 949 or on air at joy.org.au. And Andrew, very special guest with us all hour.
That's right. Mark S. King is with us. My Fabulous Disease is his blog. Mm. Now, Mark, we're just touching on then the raising of the bar, as you describe it, where...
So to speak.
Mm-hmm. Where, not the other, but yeah.
Right.
You cannot get an STI is the message as you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's related to the... What do we call it? Normalization, heteroization of gay culture.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. I don't know if you're walking me into a trap or not, but I think there's a lot of that. But you know what? I think that there was always gay men who were highly sexualized and took advantage of their 20s or 50s, and then there were people who were monogamous and got a partner. I mean, we've seen it. We know gay couples who were together for 50 years and those who were not. I think that history and periods of history just sheds light on one or the other. I don't think that the essential makeup really changes all that much. And what we're seeing in the last 10 years, certainly in the United States with gay marriage, is that history is shedding a light on those couples that want to be married, that want the house in the suburbs and the dog, and that's their lives. And so that's what we're focusing on. I don't think that that means that all gay men have decided that's what they want.
No.
Or any one gay man wants that immediately. Mm. You know, he might be highly sexual for a long time. So I don't know. I do know that our history as gay men, and certainly the way we live today, is highly informed by AIDS, fear, judgment, stigma, shame. And so it's kind of hard to get back to whatever place that was in the 70s where we could be fully functioning sexual human beings. And I also think that it's true that as a community, you know, we were still maturing as a community.
Yeah.
You know,
Stonewall was only what, 10 years prior
of course.
To HIV starting.
Of course. Mm. And so, you know, sexuality was a highly shameful thing. And so we were, you know, doing it in a lot of back alleys and sort of thing. And now you have to go to a sex club and they put up something that looks like a back alley and so that you can have sex there. You know, it's so true. We don't have to do it on the streets anymore. I think that we're just that just sociologically we've grown up. And so that now people can make choices as to what kind of sexuality works for them. I just don't like it when we impose the kind of fear, judgment, and stigma that has happened around AIDS for the last 30 years when it comes to things like PrEP or when you have other tools at your disposal. We're the victims of our own success when it comes to condoms. We have mm-hmm. convinced men that they're all going to hell or at least dying if they don't use one. And it's never allowed for the fact that people have always, gay men have always figured out other ways to protect themselves that didn't involve condoms. Now, they may not have been quite as effective, maybe not, in terms of sticking to other positive men or sexual positioning in terms of who was at greater risk, all of those sorts of things. It's almost as if we've taken on a lot of judgment ourselves. I see that. I don't know. I can't speak for what it's like here. I just know that in the United States, there is an awful lot of resentments across the viral divide and shame towards the positive guys and resentments toward the negative guys. And even within that, you've got negative guys judging other negative guys who are on PrEP.
Yeah.
You know, assuming they must be, you know, swimming around the viral soup of all of these other barebacking sluts that they're hanging out with. It's just disappointing to me.
One of my mates has just come back from America on holidays and he told me that most of the guys, he's like, slut confession, most of the guys that I slept with were on PrEP. And that's an incredible thing to hear for someone who's living here where we don't have it at all. Unless you're on a study.
Or unless you import it.
Oh, yeah. That's an option.
Yeah.
And the fact that so many people are being proactive in the States about this.
Well, and you know, I've seen a lot of the first thing people I met when I got here were Australian HIV activists who were pro PrEP and I was shocked. I didn't even know that it was not approved here, that it wasn't available, because it is certainly the most significant thing to happen since we figured out the drugs in 1996. It is absolutely the most important thing to happen. It's interesting though, because it's a medication, but it's not for the pos guys. It's for the negative guys. And I think that's a wonderful development, because it puts you in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
You know, am I going to be the one that makes sure that I don't have to worry about is he telling the truth, or what if we get nastier in bed than I intended on whatever it is? You're the one in the driver's seat because you're taking that pill every morning.
And we were talking about this early, that the onus should be on everyone.
Of course, but you know what? It's really tough. As somebody living with HIV for a long time, it's really tough, because ultimately, and I have a tough time responding to this, ultimately it comes down to, I know I'm HIV positive.
Yep.
I know I am.
Mm.
And so what is my moral obligation to share that with you? And for a long time, I absolutely had that moral obligation. I don't feel so strongly about it anymore. And the reason is because I know that having an undetectable viral load means that I am incapable of transmitting the virus. And I don't mean a really good chance. I mean incapable.
Yeah.
You know, let's just speak real world terms of what we really know.
Yeah.
What we really know is anybody who is consistently on their medications, who has an undetectable viral load for, well, in the studies, they said at least 1 year. It's been many years for me.
Yeah.
I'm not infecting anybody. So because I know that to be true, do I really have to humor your ignorance? Mm. Do I really have to? I mean, if we don't have a conversation about who's positive and who's negative, am I really compelled to tell you just in case you say, oh my God, I don't want to get your HIV. Yep. Then I have to sit there and be an HIV educator.
Yeah. You have to be an educator. And then you also have to be an activist as well.
Yeah. And you know, I don't mind doing that, but if we do it, we're not going to fuck.
I'm not going to
be in the position of talking somebody into anything. I don't mind educating you, but take what I've told you and go find somebody else.
Yeah.
Because
it's not really sexy.
Well, it's not so much that it's not sexy, although it's not for me so much, you know. Oh, anyway, it's not, but it's also, I don't mind sharing the information, but ultimately it is your decision. And I am not going to be in the position of talking somebody into something, you know, not because I think I'm going to infect you, but you know, I don't know what your psychic freak out is going to be later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have time for that.
No, I don't. It depends on where are we having this conversation? You know, if we're having this conversation online, if I'm talking to you online, you know what? I just put pause in my profile.
Yeah.
And you know, and so they can take it from there. But what if we're in the sex club?
Yeah.
You know, what if I'm only seeing a part of your anatomy? Do I need to knock through the glory hole? You know, should I whisper something? I've actually had a guy whisper through a glory hole at me and say, "Are you clean?"
Jeez. Oh my
God. And I said, "Are you going to believe the answer?" I'm saying, are you going to believe the answer? Because, if you're going to trust what I'm about to tell you, then you need to leave this club right now go to a testing clinic and get tested. Because if you're trusting the word of a guy to whom you're speaking through a 3-inch hole in the wall, I got no advice for you.
One of the things, the best analogy I've heard about PrEP is one that I heard on Monday night with Nicholas on Q&A. But I understand it was also, you've used it a lot, is that the PrEP is the pill that the women had in the 60s.
Absolutely. And history does love to repeat itself because in that time, 50 years ago, in fact, you had a culture in which the following questions were being asked. Well, we don't know if it's been studied enough. Well, we don't know if it's been safe. It's too expensive. We're not really sure how effective it is. And by the way, by God, why can't they just use condoms?
And all the women will turn into whores.
Yes. Oh, yes. And all of those points were made about the pill. And women have been perfectly capable of demonstrating that they can have a responsible sex life without becoming whores. You know, they just want, you know, they want to take control of their bodies. And certainly, I think that that's all we're expecting negative men to do. And you know what? If you don't like PrEP, don't take it. Mm. Don't take it. If you can use a condom consistently each and every time you have sex and you're having sex and putting, having sex with, you know, more than one person, you're a single guy on the scene, then, and you don't like PrEP, fine. Don't use it. Don't judge the people who are, because statistically it is as effective as condoms when used consistently. And by the way, condoms are only effective when used consistently too. You know, so it applies to everything. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control in the States, says that not using a condom consistently is as risky as never using one, because sooner or later the odds catch up with you. Yeah. So don't give me your high falutin bullshit about, you know, condoms every time, when we know that gay men by and large are not doing that.
Hide and seek.
It's your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
The most diverse sound for the most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
Andrew the Apprentice and James Finlay are joined by Mark S. King. Now, Mark, a lot of what you're talking about is also obviously related to stigma, and stigma, no doubt, has been the big buzzword of the conference over the last week. What do you think might be the best ways to get rid of stigma?
Well, first of all, I think that the best, I've always often heard it said that the best antidote to stigma is empowerment, and the fact that nobody can really feel you make you feel less of a person without your consent. I think that was Eleanor Roosevelt who said that. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think a lot of it. I think gay men are more than well equipped of being bitchy and cutting other people down, and I think we're good at that.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is a defense mechanism because we grew up and we were bullied and we were told we were less than.
Yep.
And you kind of get this posture where I'll hurt you before you can hurt me.
Yep.
You
know?
And
that's interesting.
So I think that we're good at that. I think that. We have to learn, for instance, those of us who are HIV positive, we have to really take a look as to whether or not we might be a little more resilient than we think we are. You know, how many of what kind of schoolyard taunts like this are we going to put up with or really care about? Because we know it comes from a place of fear and ignorance. And so I really don't let it bother me. And I try to understand why somebody might have whatever attitudes like that about who I am or what I do, and you know what, it's just a matter of personal resilience and integrity to know that whatever, when people say things like that, it's usually not got nothing to do about with you. You know, it's about whatever their shit is, and so as with the rest of life, I like to see that stigma is an enormous word. It is not insignificant. But I think we start, now that we've established that there's a lot of stigma,
yep.
Then I think we need to start looking at whether or not we're falling into a victimhood of I'm stigmatized. You know, I believe that it is legitimate. I think that a lot of times we're being very sensitive. We need to get over ourselves and move on, have a life.
Okay.
You talk about defense mechanism there. A lot of that comes down to, as you said, discrimination when we're younger. Mental health as a whole, it's interesting. I was at a mental health conference recently and there was no discussion of stigma, no discussion of HIV there. Mm-hmm. At an LGBTI mental health conference. Mm-hmm. I don't know if at the AIDS conference whether there's been much discussion of mental health.
There has been, but it's interesting because in some countries one is funded and not the other.
Yeah.
And rarely do they intersect in one organization.
Yeah.
For instance, or our drug treatment along with HIV or yeah. things like that. And that is a shame because a lot of times that has to do with funding streams and what the government is giving you money for, and sometimes they're not, you know, they're one hand is not talking to the other. But certainly that has a lot to do with it. And the whole idea of self-esteem and feeling good about yourself so that you can make healthy decisions and all of that stuff. Oh, my God. I've been hearing language like this for 5 days at the conference. Let's talk about sex.
We can.
We can. That's
now,
all right.
You owned the largest sex line company?
Yes. Okay.
In America.
Yes.
Now,
okay.
These don't really exist anymore.
No, they do exist. No, you know what they are right now? They're Scruff. They've become Scruff.
Yeah.
It's a do-it-yourself sort of thing. And
well, that's true. I guess it's
okay. Yeah. Now I feel like your grandfather. Gather around, boys and girls, and I'll tell you about the olden days. So
yes,
before there was Scruff, before there were computers with Manhunt or what have you on them, or bulletin board lines, so now we're going back 25 years, or even party lines where you would call and leave a message and talk to another hot guy, before any of that, what would you do? Technology in the 80s was not as advanced. You would have phone sex companies. And it would have a toll-free number, and you would call. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and most of these were based in Los Angeles, and people would call from all over the country and pay $45, which in 1982
was a lot of money,
and order the kind of guy, well, sir, we've checked out your credit card, and we're charging you $45. Now, what kind of man would you like to talk to?
Okay.
What age? How hung? And hairy or smooth? And any particular scene you'd like? That sort of thing. And then, lo and behold, you'd hang up the phone and wait patiently. And within a few moments, within a few moments, one of these dream men would call you back.
Right.
And gosh darn it, if he wasn't very, very clear, nearly exactly what you ordered.
You must have had a huge warehouse with all these men in it.
Yes, of course we did. Oh, stables of them.
And, so does the person put the phone down and then like compose themselves? Okay, so I'm this.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is, the truth is you're so excited just ordering, placing the order. Like, oh my God, well, I can have anything? Well, do you have any firemen? You know? As a matter of fact, we do. Fireman Bill is on duty. You don't mind if he's got 9 inches, right? You know? So, anyway, I was an actor living in Los Angeles, and these services existed there. I saw them in the papers. They were local, and I thought, I bet I could do that. I wonder how much they pay. Because I was a struggling actor in L.A. So
instead of being a waiter...
Instead of being a waiter, exactly, and let me tell you, the hours were better. Yeah. I never had to leave the house because the company would call me and say, okay, here's the guy's phone number. Uh-huh. You're going to call him. He wants 25 to 30, dark, hairy, muscular bodybuilder, whatever.
All right, I can do
well,
that.
And so I had a shoebox of index cards.
Yeah.
Of all the guys that I would be talking to on a regular basis, because it turned out I had a way with words. And so now, mind you, let's just be clear. I wouldn't get off. This was not about me getting off. No, because if you think about your needs, your own needs, it's much harder to, you have to like tell this story to this guy and talk to him and make sure, first of all, A, he's got to be naked and ready to go. You don't want to start a conversation with some guy that's still got all his clothes on.
No.
Take him off because you want to get this conversation over and done with so they can go take the next call.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But you want to act as if you're not in any rush, right? No. I had an index card file that had at least 1,000 cards in it, and then a lot of regular people who would call. And, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun, and it was. I got to take on these different personas all day and of various types of people. But what was interesting about it that I really think was helpful in my HIV work, you didn't laugh at that. I'm glad because I'm really serious. Is the fact that it was enormous insight into gay male sexuality.
Yeah.
Because what you don't tell your friends about what you really want, maybe what you don't even tell your tricks about what you really want, when you're on the phone with a stranger in the dark and you're jacking off at home, and you paid $45 for this, pretty soon, sooner or later, you blurt out what you want.
Oh, this is good. This is good.
You know, and. So I got that insight, you know, and sometimes it was a process. I had people that were calling me every week for several years. And so it was enormous insight into the sexuality of gay men. And guess what? The vast majority, and by that I mean 9 out of 10 of the men that called wanted a top. Now, whether they were actually performing bottoms in their real life or not, I don't think it was as much about that.
No.
What I think it was about is that we want to be taken care of. We just want to be taken care of. And especially when you're feeling vulnerable, a lot of these guys, they weren't calling from big cities. They lived in the Midwest. They were in Ohio. They were in small towns. There wasn't a lot of gay outlets for them.
Yep.
They were lonely. They were vulnerable. They wanted to be taken care of. They wanted somebody to take charge and take care of it. I just think that's a kind of a basic human need. It doesn't matter what your sexual position is. Mm. You just want, you know, and so the vast majority of them wanted that. And now I had this in the early 80s, and as AIDS began, I was so callous at that time. I thought, oh, great for business. People will be calling me, you know, because they're scared to go out and have sex.
Yeah. Well,
and while that was true,
I
was young. I was in my 20s and I was callous. And as I became more aware of what was going on in my community, it seemed a little ludicrous to be, you know, making a buck off of sex when I could go to work for an AIDS organization, which is what I did. I sold the company. But it's also true that what happened, it screwed with my head. And not just because I was talking about sex all day, but because I had such entree into their heads, into who they were as people. I had guys confessing things to me, talking about their life, love life, about the boyfriend that they hope they're getting. Sometimes the calls would end because they met somebody and they just stopped calling for a while.
Yeah.
And then they'd call
Come
again because it didn't work out or whatever. And crying on my pillow sort of thing, you know.
Shit.
And I knew so much about them. everything they knew about me was a lie. Everything.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at me now. I am not a, well, I'm 6'3",
yeah.
But I am not a dark, hairy, leather man sort of, you know, well, especially then, you know, I'm a redhead. Then I was a 22-year-old tall, skinny redhead, you know, and they thought they were talking to, you know, a bodybuilder that was part-time fireman living on Venice Beach, you know.
And just, you're a little twinky, skinny redhead.
And I'm a little twinky, skinny redhead at the time. And so everything about me was a lie, and I kept that persona up. And I think what screwed with my head is that I was let into so many intimacies with them, and they would ask about me. I had a story for everything, but it was all a lie.
Yeah, sure.
And it was tough. It talk about being disingenuous, right? You know, it certainly was.
I can't imagine what it'd been like when after you left this job, because you would have heard. Because you heard all this shit from these guys about what they wanted sexually.
Yes.
That people would only confess with about over the phone when they don't know who's on the other side.
Right.
When you later hooked up with guys, was it somewhere in the back of your mind where you think, oh, people must watch this?
Well, certainly. I think that I have insight, and it's funny. I think that I can take a hint more than some people, or there will be some sort of, just in my personal sexual life, I do think that there are times in which I pick up, there's a kernel of something there that you indicate, and I will mine for that. I know there's something there, and I will get in there and find out what it is.
Yeah.
And maybe my instincts around that are a little more sharpened than other people's were. But what was more interesting for me in terms of my work is I went to work for AIDS in 1986. And we were just developing programs for gay men and HIV prevention programs. And in the development of those programs, I had a good understanding of not what we thought gay men were doing or what we thought gay men might respond to when we tried to craft messages about safer sex or whatever it was.
And not just the gay men who were up there in front and center. Either.
Right. Because even those of us who were out about it, it's not like they were willing to talk about the intimacies of their sex life. Mm-hmm. And that's what was being asked of us. I mean, remember, this is 1985. We had just kind of had this gay sexual revolution in the 70s and all of that. But we weren't used to telling the world, this is what we do. This is how we fuck.
Yeah,
this is what we like. Mm-hmm. You know, specifically, I like his cum to go there and then I do this and then that. But we had to know that so we could understand how to tell, to describe. To talk about safe sex, or at least this is how you get it, this is how you don't.
We couldn't
figure that out unless we had really honest conversations about, okay, how many of you like cum in your ass? How many of you, you know, just swallow it but don't do that, you know, so that we could understand levels of risk and all of that. And I don't know, today we that second happened because we've been talking about AIDS for so long. We all know how you get it, what you do, and all of that. Then it was a very new conversation to be that public about it. And so I think that in fact, my previous experience kind of gave me a head start on what might really be going on.
Yeah.
We are speaking with Mark S. King here on Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Andrew the Apprentice and James Finlay on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek, Joy's Only Sex, Sexuality and Self Program Exploring, all of those things. Joining us in the studio, of course, is Mark S. King, who has been with us for the last 50 minutes. But now joining us is executive producer of Hide and Seek, Dean Beck.
Andrew, don't laugh. Don't be so fucking rude. Look, I want to say, firstly...
As a verb.
Not a...
Anyway,
Mark S. King is an inspiration in the global HIV response, particularly around men who have sex with men, purely because he's prepared to have those conversations that most of us aren't willing to have. And he's been... anyone listening, here's the thing. Google Sound of Stigma. His name will pop up, and read it and absorb it because it will blow you away.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. Thank you very much. I do like that article.
Well, and if you want to know more about that article, you can look at the podcast of my interview with Mark from last weekend.
Yeah.
I've got an announcement to make.
You've just come from a function.
I have.
One of many, many functions that are happening this week.
Now, Mr. King here is one who understands the importance of being acknowledged, because what it does is empower our community to do two things. Firstly, step up, and secondly, to energize those coming behind us. And it gives those that who are prepared to make a stand, willing to be mentors in a space of sometimes challenging engagement. Tonight, the Gay and Lesbian Organisation for Business Enterprise had a function on the 45th floor of something on Collins Street, where both the Minister for Small Business and the Minister for Health spoke, and I spoke to the President of Globe, David Micallef, shortly after the official proceedings. 45 floors above Melbourne, during the AIDS 2014 conference, the Gay and Lesbian Organisation for Business Enterprise is acknowledging some of the tremendous community work that is being done amongst us. And with me now is David Micallef. He's the president of Globe. And David, more money handed out this year than any other year, I think.
Yes, definitely more than any other year. Globe has had a great year this year, both thanks to our sponsorship from Lander and Rogers and Art Hotels as well in the Cullen, but we've also been holding a lot more events this year. I think we've held more in the past 6 months of this year than we did in the previous 2 years.
Wow, that's pretty big.
We're now up to doing about 2 or 3 events a month. A lot of them have been well attended. While we don't make a lot of money on events, we do usually make sure that any profits go towards the community grants, and we've also increased the members. We've gone from, when I joined the committee, we were down to around 100 members. Last week, we just had our 250th member.
Well, congratulations. And that level of engagement by some of the, I guess, financially empowered members of our community, those who are running businesses, is a tremendous endorsement of the work that you and your board are doing.
It has been really good to see that response from the community, actually. It has been, because we do spend a lot of time on Globe. And I've got a lot of good members on the community who give up a lot of their time. So seeing those numbers go up, seeing people at our events, just shows that we're doing something right.
That engagement of new members, is that across all age demographics, or what do you put it down to, I guess?
It's been a mixture of having more events, but we've been also been engaging a slightly younger demographic as well. So we're starting to see a lot younger people at the start of their careers. They're starting to come to Globe to network and meet others, where the age demographic used to be in the 35 to 55 age group, it started to go down. We're also starting to see a lot more small businesses coming on board, and we also had our first corporate sponsor as well, and hopefully some more.
Investing in our nation's future is clearly what Globe Melbourne is doing. Tonight, you celebrated community endeavour in a way that is done annually, but in a way that was tonight done to a greater extent than any other year. Tell us about the award recipients. What do they get, and why were they acknowledged?
So the grants every year, we give $1,000, and we generally look to give our community grants to some of the smaller organisations in our community and some of the ones that really do need our support. So this year, we've given grants to Start Out Australia, who just started in our community and are really working to help improve the mental health outcomes for transgender and those of diverse sexuality and gender, and our grant will go towards helping them build an online mentoring platform for young people. We've got Pride TV, who are doing a great project in our community to do some awareness videos of all of our community groups, and it'll be a great tool for people to see what is out there in the community. We also gave a grant to a lovely young woman, Sarah Calati, who lost a leg after a motorbike accident some years ago and got over her depression by starting to play sport, and hopefully our grant will help her go on to play wheelchair tennis at the Paralympics in 2016.
One of my little pet projects with the gay and lesbian community has been the FTM female to male trans community, and the FTM shed is something that has just exploded in Melbourne. They were tonight a recipient of one of your awards.
Yes, they were. Andrew from FTM shed was here tonight, and they're a really great support group, and the work that they do in the female to male transgender community is really important, and the grant that we've given them will help them build an online community that will allow them to really give anonymous support to people in the transgender community.
And one of the stalwarts of our community is the Melbourne Gay and Lesbian Chorus. They were acknowledged tonight and will get some new uniforms thanks to Globe Melbourne.
Yes, they will. We're really glad to support the Melbourne Gay and Lesbian Chorus. As you said, they are celebrating their 25th year. They've been a constant in our community, and you know, apart from having absolutely wonderful voices, they're really a great organisation that really helps connect people and support people in our community. So we're really quite proud to be supporting them as well.
A very special announcement tonight by Globe, and that is that Community Endeavour will be acknowledged by the organisation like this state has never seen before.
Yes, we had the pleasure of announcing tonight that we will be holding a Globe Community Awards, recognising some of the inspiring work that's happening in our community. We've been doing a lot of work with people in the community, and we just see the amount of hours, endless hours that people put in, well above and beyond, to really support others in the community. And we really think it's about time that we start to stop and recognise and thank people for the work that they do and recognise the work that's out there.
It is well and truly overdue in this state. David Micallef, congratulations on the great night. Continued success with Globe Melbourne.
Thank you, Dean.
There you go.
David Micallef, president of Globe, announcing that finally Victoria will have some awards that we can be most proud of for our community.
I think New South Wales has had these for a little
while. Yeah, they have. Mm. They have. And they've managed to incorporate it along with, you know, the glitz and glamour and carry-on of Best Drag Queen and all of that,
yeah,
which is all fun. But what we've never really had in Victoria is real acknowledgement of the real work that is done on the ground level above and beyond the fluff. Yeah. And Mr. S. King has been the recipient of a recent award, I believe.
Yeah, tell us about that. You just won an award.
Well, yes, there's a National Gay and Lesbian Journalists Association in the States, and today they awarded me with Excellence in Blogging. They're bloggers.
Oh,
award.
Congratulations. And,
listen to that. Thank you very much. I know that you're short on time. I've just got to say that not only has this been a tremendous week in Melbourne, but I'm so pleased that I bookended it with two trips to Joy 94.9. Y'all have not only been courteous and just so welcoming to me, but your geeks fixed my computer on the first day I was here when it crashed, or I would not have gotten any work done.
We've got some great geeks.
I'm so grateful. Thank you.
And James, we just got a message in from Brisbane.
We did. Hello, all. Wow, that Mark King has one hell of a sexy voice. Gee, I wouldn't mind playing hide and seek with him anytime. Wow.
No
kidding. I wonder if he's got a six pack to go with that nice voice. I wonder how he was able to work as a sex on the phone worker. Speaking of which, the village people have a song called Sex on the Phone.
Can I tell you, he's all right.
Well, you know, and I'll just say that I hope he doesn't want me to talk dirty, because that's just shop talk.
Marcus King, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.